Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Australian Sharon Thompson trained as a classical singer and contemporary vocalist, worked in a variety of musical contexts. In addition to performing and devising, she coaches solo artists for TV, music theatre and the music industry. Passionate about the natural environment, she's been known to turn her musical skills to assisting with environmental campaigns. Sharon's private and professional walking practice is diverse and represents a learning journey in sight-responsive listening and making. Interviewed in central London, she just finished a run of Forever Young at the Traverse in Edinburgh, working with Australian Theatre Collective One Step at a Time like this.
Throughout this time, which is possibly of more interest to me personally in terms of talking walking, my walking practice didn't fail. So that's something that was it's extremely consistent, because I was also a very committed environmentalist through all of this wild entertainment industry time. And I tried to put my various abilities to good use, and I joined what was then called the Gold Coast Environment Centre, which is now called GECCO. At that point in time, the challenge that was being faced was there's a wonderful national park that's now heritage listed in a place called Springbrook, which is in the hinterland behind the Gold Coast. Beautiful tropical rainforest, waterfalls. It's just stunning. At that point in time, there was a major corporation. I can't remember who they were. I think it was connected to Donald Trump somehow in the back of my mind. We're talking 30 years ago. 30 years ago. They were trying to build a golf course on the top of Springbrook Range, and complete with helipad and everything. So I got together with some friends of mine, and we rewrote some classic Bacharach pieces, and I sang these alternative lyrics to what the world needs now is, Lord, right. We don't need another golf course and all that sort of thing. So all that time it was sort of working together, because I was very fond of walking in Springbrook. It was a very special place for me. I had the great opportunity through that time also to do some work at another national park called Lamington National Park, which is also heritage listed, to work 7 kilometres into the forest on one of the tracks doing soundscape, vocal soundscape. So that was a real combination of sort of the walking and the singing coming together. Very special to be able to bring those two things together in that way, and to walk slowly for many weeks up there and just listen to what was already in the forest and what might a human voice elucidate or companion in that forest that wasn't just going to be superimposed, because I was really not interested in that. Mm-hmm. So that was great. Through that time, that was all happening simultaneously. The walking part of me has been really, really present. And I walked Burley Headland a lot. I don't know if you know Burley Headland. It's a very special place. It's actually the site of an Aboriginal Bora ring, which is an energy focal point. And there are some naturally occurring columns there that come out, so they're perpendicular to the cliff face. And you can actually sit on them if you're very, very careful. It's a really stunning spot. So that was another one of my very favourite walking paths in that time. But I spent a lot of time either in lights, in crazy places in the middle of surfer's paradise, total Nutsville, like a miniature Las Vegas, or juxtaposed, with the other end was being in the rainforest.
Tell us what's been happening more recently, Anne.
So when I met you, Andrew, in 2012 at Sideways in Belgium, and I was on a 3-month study tour. I'd been travelling a lot, and I was really looking forward to just being somewhere with a slower pace.
You talk about travelling a lot. You seem to travel a lot. You just told me that you've been travelling since June, and we're now in October. So yeah. What's caused you to travel this much?
I'm curious. So in 2012, I was doing a study tour. It was part of a postgraduate year that I was doing for mature artists with a practice. And so my object that time was to really look at live art across mostly Europe is what I was interested in. So there are a few festivals that I picked out that I thought, yes, I really want to be there and find out what is current practice. What are people doing? What are they bringing to their artwork? And meet as many people as I could. And Sideways looked really fascinating to me, because walking's such a part of my life. So then I returned to Australia with having seen, I think I clocked up over 300 performances that I attended, which was incredibly informative and ultimately indigestible. So I spent quite some time digesting that. And my work with One Step at a Time like this, well, I'd already worked with them. We have worked together on and off over a period of, I'd say, about 20 years.
We're looking forward to interviewing them. But just perhaps can you explain a little bit what One Step at a Time like this?
One Step at a Time like this, they've all been theatre practitioners indoors. But they all also have a passion for doing things outdoors. It was Julian who really seeded the first outdoor work, which was called En Route, called A Love Song to the City. And I can't remember which city it was in when it was described in that way, but that's, I think, fairly accurate because it's a walking-based, it's a perambulatory tour through the city with an audio component. There's some technology involved, so you have to have a mobile phone with you, and there's some communication that happens via telephone calls and text message. It's a solo journey through a city, so every city it goes to, people attend it one at a time, and it's recreated for the city that it goes to, wherever it lands. It's been in a number of cities. It started in Melbourne. It's been in Chicago. It's been in Seoul. It's been in Stratford here for the London Cultural Olympiad. I think I've got that right. It's travelled quite widely. When En Route was created, One Step at a Time comprised four primary core members: Suzanne Kirsten, Julian Rickett, Claire Korobach, and Paul Moyer. And in that incarnation, that's where En Route really came into its own. So I do everything from performing with them to audio work. So Julian and I have often worked together on the audio tracks for different shows. My role has expanded in the company. So we all do administrative tasks and we all create the work together. So it's very much a collaborative process.
Right now you're involved in a show that's travelling and it's called Forever Young. And you say there's quite a large walking element in this.
Yes, there is. So this work was seeded in Clonmel in Tipperary in Ireland, and it's actually a collaboration between six teenagers from Clonmel and One Step at a Time like this. The work was not only seeded there, it was also devised and created there. And this, again, one person travels through the journey of the work at a time. It's intermittently an audio component. It's not there all the time in this work because the teenagers actually facilitate the movement of the audience member through space. We were playing with questions around what happens to that youthful idealism. Where does it go as we age? Do we still have a relationship with it? And how is it active in us today? The end of the show happened indoors, but the majority of it was out on the streets of Edinburgh in this case that I'm talking about now, where we've just premiered it. There was a lot of walking involved in that show. I was averaging 20 kilometres a day, just going back and forth and making sure all the connections stayed and running props and things like that. So there's a lot of walking involved, and it's a different context, and there are different things that we meet along the way. So sometimes there were situations we had to deal with, things to sort out that were not to do with the show. So
I can say, members of the public wandering through?
That's part of our work, is serendipity. We're always sort of playing with what serendipity is out on the streets. And, of course, the show has to be elastic enough to embrace any possibilities that might happen to come along, which meant, you know, sometimes we were working in areas where there were homeless people, so we had to be very sensitive to their homes on street corners and different places where they needed to be. Building projects would start that we were unaware of, and suddenly we'd see crates and pallets full of bricks and things on the footpath where previously we'd had access. So we had things to solve. You know, there are problems out on the streets. You see that when you walk, when you create walking works,
you see it. You have to be thinking on your feet.
You do. And you see all of what society is and what it isn't, you know. It's a very different thing to being inside a theatre.
So that's what you do in collaboration. What do you do now on your own? Or maybe you don't have time to do anything on your own?
Well, I don't get a lot of time, actually. I can't really do a lot outside of the One Step umbrella. You know, to step out from under that umbrella is really not possible with the time constraints. So the work that I'm doing is really with One Step now. But that doesn't mean that I don't dream about about other work, and I've had other things that I'm still interested in that combine, again, audiences travelling on foot where possible.
Are you still bringing in the
locations,
kind of vocal soundscape?
Yeah, definitely. So I started a project when I was away in 2012, actually, that was, I guess, use that word again, seeded by a tunnel under a major freeway in Kassel in northern Germany. I just found the acoustics were amazing. It was all closed down. It had had shops in it previously and all sorts of things, but it was all mosaiced and concrete and lots of graffiti, and it was just really a stimulating location. And it made me think a lot about voice works and underground and that sort of thing. So I started, when I got back to Melbourne, a project called Dirt Song, which is really working in abandoned tunnels, essentially, or tunnels that people don't know are there that have amazing acoustics, and working with the residue and representing the residue from sensing what's around in the tunnel just by literally inhabiting the place, sensing what that residue might be if it were represented vocally.
You're trying to interpret the space through what you hear and then reinterpret it through the voice?
I think that's true to say. I think it was in a conversation that Julian was having with John McGrath, who's just moved to Manchester Festival, I think that's right. I think in their conversation they were talking about how to name this sighted work, and I think the term sight responsive came up.
Ah, right, okay.
And to me that was really interesting, because that addresses what you've just spoken to me about.
Yeah, I'm wandering around trying to think of the right vocabulary,
I'm often doing that too. But my ears really picked up when I heard that terminology. I thought, oh, sight responsive. That is it. It's sort of being in a conversation with the sight. It's not so much sight specific, because it could be in any sight as long as there's a relationship. So that responsiveness is the thing. So, yes, I agree with you. And then having said that, because my trainings, I am laden with narratives, a narrative that comes out of, I suppose, an ethnomusicological perspective in terms of my cultural roots, my contemporaneous, where I'm from in terms of time. All of those things make a difference, and also that the exposure I've had to historical material, which in turn gives me certain scaffolding or frameworks from a musical perspective that I'm going to draw upon. So in that sense, if I'm working melodically, then there's going to be that narrative content will be an overlay anyway. So any other narrative is in addition to that existing narrative. I'm not opposed to working with narrative, but because I've had a background as an environmentalist over many, many years, I'm less interested in imposing. I guess that's... I'm not opposed to it. I've done it. But I think there's a lot. We know what those relationships are to a reasonable extent at this point in time. So what lies in places that we don't know so much perhaps piques my curiosity a bit more.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot, because what you have to do now is you have to recommend two walks.
But if I go back to Melbourne and I think of a walk there, and what strikes me about this walk is the absence of sound. So that's why I like this walk in particular. So it's through an area called Wonga Park, which is in the Yarra Valley. The Yarra Valley is famous for wine and handmade cheeses and chocolates and things, so it's very much a foodies area. But this part in Wonga Park runs alongside the Yarra River, and it's just a fairly steep walk up a hill to a hilltop, but there's a 360-degree view, and you can just hear the river below, when it's really still. That's all there is to hear. Occasionally there's a rustle, and there are big mobs of kangaroos that live in this area. It's not that hard at any time of the day or night to find a mob somewhere if you know where to look for them. So it's a very, very special place in terms of communing with the sky. The river's just a distant hum, maybe.
Okay, so let's try a sound piece or a sound walk.
So a sound piece or a sound walk. I can name one of which is naturally occurring. And that's the walk through the rainforest from in Lamington National Park between Binnaburra and O'Reilly's. The sounds in that park combined with the scent when you walk through, walking through there, it's just an extraordinarily enveloping experience. The canopy is very dense, so the light comes through in a very dappled manner. Sometimes you can walk literally kilometres and there's no light coming through the rainforest. Every now and then a bird alights in response. The deeper you go into the forest, the more of an experience there is of what the forest itself is. So birds' wings start to become very prominent sounds as they scatter, because they hear you coming if you're footfall isn't quite light enough, and it's spectacular for it's unpredictable, it's enveloping, it's a multi-sensory experience. It moves of its own being as one moves through time and space into the forest. So it's a wonderful thing to do, to go up there with several hours to spare and just keep walking deeper and deeper and deeper, because all of the people sounds fade very quickly in that forest. The light is removed fairly quickly.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Sharon Thompson. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.